Hello and welcome to the OneTrust Talks Tech podcast. This is episode number 49, recorded on August 5th, 2024. My name is Roger Dean and I work on the product team here at OneTrust and I'm the host of this podcast. In this episode, we're going to take a closer look at the new APIs that have been released as public preview in the summer release. To help us get through this topic, Devin Ryan from the product team will be joining us to give us much more detail. As always, just a quick reminder that this podcast reflects OneTrust's current expectations for product capabilities. Be advised that dates and features may be subject to change and should not be relied upon when making purchasing decisions. Before Devin gets on, I thought it'd be a good idea just to give a quick overview of what an API is, if you're not familiar. So an API stands for Application Program Interface. And basically all websites, all services have APIs in them. So this is basically a function call that your website makes into the backend architecture to say, give me information, write information, show, give me something I can show, things like that. So behind websites, behind services, there are always APIs. Sometimes these APIs are private and are not exposed to the public. Sometimes they are exposed to the public. These APIs that we're talking about today are exposed. They are publicly available. They require, obviously, authentication to get access to. And these are all centered around our consent and preferences product, which we'll go into much more detail with Devin, but we have a ton of customers using our current APIs, and there's a huge amount of volume of data that is requested or written to the product, requested from the product or written to the product using APIs. And so these are just more efficient and highly available APIs. We'll talk about in a minute. But in general, an API, like I said, is used by, you know, the website itself to get information from the backend architecture. It also can be used by other applications or services or custom written applications. If you want to integrate with a third party application, you can use APIs to do that. There are also tools out there that are kind of a go-between. So between, let's say, OneTrust and maybe Snowflake or something like that, if we don't explicitly write code in OneTrust to talk to Snowflake, we can actually use a third-party product to take our calls outbound, and it will take those calls in and then translate them into a call into another system such as Snowflake. So if I want to say, I want to write some information into this application, I would send this API call to that application to do that, or I would send it to this third party, which will then translate it over and write it into that application. You can also write custom applications. I do this a lot. I love APIs. I will write an application to pull data out of a system and put it into a database or put it into a report, or just use it to then make a decision on it and send it out. And so using an API is much more efficient than maybe exporting a file into an Excel file and then going through the Excel file and then creating something and then uploading that to something else and then maybe that having do the same thing that I could just simply do by pulling information using what's called a get command, get data from something using an API, and then writing it or posting it back to another system where it will then maybe send an email notification or something like that. So APIs are incredibly powerful tools to use a product's information and not necessarily go through the website interface that most people use. With OneTrust, we have a couple ways you can take advantage of this. One is that we have an integrations workflow, which is basically a front end on APIs, which allows you to do things that maybe you can't as easily do in the OneTrust application through the normal UI. And you can create an integration that, like, if this happens, then go do something else. And that something else maybe call an API to configure some data or to change some things. And you can also have that go out to third-party systems. Like I said before, that's a really, really, really common use case for us to have an integration where if something happens in OneTrust, then send out a notification to another application. Or other way around, if something happens in another application, then send a call into OneTrust to have it do something. I know some customers I've talked to that have integrated with their vendor management system. So when a new vendor is added into their vendor management system for paying bills and invoicing and tracking purchases and things like that, then they will send an API call into our integrations workflows that says a new vendor is added, go create a record for them so we can start doing risk assessments and we can start doing those types of things that we do with vendors in OneTrust. But instead of a person looking on a report and then going and typing that into OneTrust, they use these integrations and APIs to do that. it's the same thing is happening specifically with our consent APIs, is where lots of customers want to import data in. Maybe they're migrating from another system to OneTrust for privacy or consent, or they want to take the consent decisions that customers make, that their customers make, and export them out into another system or run reports or analyze or do that kind of stuff that we don't natively do inside the OneTrust product. So again, we have millions and millions of transactions every day, and we need APIs that can support that. And also there's a case where when we upgrade OneTrust, we take our system down for a period of hours when we do the upgrade. Well, a lot of people are building in these APIs into their business flow. So they can't afford for us to be down for a few hours. So we need highly available, always up, always on APIs. A good example of this is if I were to integrate OneTrust into my sales effort, if I'm a retailer online, and that retailer, you set up a new account. Well, as part of that setting up a new account is to call OneTrust to provide consent decisions by that new customer that's signing in, or some preferences they want or things like that. Well, if the API is down because we're doing an upgrade on the system, then that basically locks that company from being able to call in and, in essence, create a new customer record, which then blocks them from making a sale. So we have to make these APIs always available and highly available and very fast and very responsive. A lot of that is what I'm going to talk about with Devin and just here in a minute, but I just definitely wanted to give everyone an indication of what APIs are, how they're used, and how they're incredibly powerful. If you're not at all interested in APIs and you just want to know what's coming out in the next release, this may not be a great podcast for you, but if you're interested in APIs, and you're interested in how we do it and how these new APIs work with consent and importing, exporting, and managing all of your receipts and all of your customers, then this would definitely be the podcast to you. Okay, now it's time for me to stop rambling on, and I'm going to bring in Devin Ryan, who is a senior product manager on our platform team, and he's been living and breathing APIs for a couple years now, I think. And he has come out and created, with the help of all the other people in the product team, these new APIs. So welcome to the podcast, Devin.
Thank you, Roger. Pleasure to be here.
I really, really enjoy this and looking forward to it. So let's talk a bit about just the background of why do we need these high profile or high availability bulk export things for data subjects? What's going on kind of behind the scenes in the product that is requiring us to build these types of APIs?
Yeah, for sure. So OneTrust as a whole has about 5 billion data subjects. So I guess before we get into why the APIs need to be highly available and why these new generation of APIs that we're releasing are important, is what are we saving in the first place? And at the core of consent and preferences is the end user, our customers' customers, the people whose consent and preferences we're trying to protect. And in essence, that is what a data subject is. A data subject in the OneTrust platform is an abstraction of a person at the end of the day. So if you take that and you go, how many customers does OneTrust have? And then how many customers do those customers have? That's how you get all these data subjects. Now, to an individual company, that could be 10 million data subjects, or that could be hundreds of millions of data subjects. And with consent, we typically speak in those volumes of hundreds of millions.
Let me ask a question. So I become a data subject to a company who's got a website when I like go in and register myself with them, or if I go in and I make some sort of decisions with respect to a cookie preference, a cookie choice or preferences, as long as I've kind of registered myself and identified myself to them. Our customers end up with millions and hundreds of millions of data subjects?
Yeah, so it's a little bit different from cookies in that cookies is the other side of the coin.
Right.
That's anonymized traffic, where with consent, it represents the first party data collection strategy of for our customers. So when ABC Co. has a checkout page for their retail experience, and you're giving them all your information, here's my first name, here's my last name, here's my email, that would end up being a data subject if they're integrated with OneTrust. And it would be an identity that the company is aware of, that can then manage consent and preference choices against that individual.
Got it. Got it. Okay.
Where it really gets interesting, too, is that what is an individual, right? We're only aware of a primary ID, but often often people have, I have a personal email address, I have a work email address.
Right.
And we offer solutions for our customers to combine these identifiers into one data subject. Because at the end of the day, you could have an email, you could have a cell phone number, whatever they're collecting, and they can aggregate that all into one data subject.
Yeah, I actually was talking to a car dealer over in the Netherlands one time when I was over there, and that was their biggest thing, is that they had three or four different records for one individual.
Yeah.
And they wanted to merge all those together into basically one record so that they knew what they were doing with that person and respecting their decisions and all that stuff. So, yeah.
And it's the core of consent and that's where all of that, those consent preferences are based off of. It's related all to the data subject at the end of the day.
Makes sense. Absolutely. So we've got our customers, OneTrust customers who have their customers. Those are the data subjects, as you say. And what is it that our customers want to do with that data subject? I understand, like, they want to do a transaction with them, maybe an e-commerce type of thing, or why would they need to manipulate those records, import, export, things like that?
Yep. So there's really three streams of use cases. Again, the use cases are as complicated and different as our customers, but they boil down into one of three lanes of use cases. The first use case is more of a login live use case. So when a customer is entering in their username, credentials, whatever applies to the relevant experience, they want to load in the preferences that were last recorded. So we have a live read of a single data subject of, okay, this person just logged in. Let's show them this, not show them that. Make sure that whatever is, you know, happening behind the scenes is respecting the consent and preferences and not collecting certain things. And then there's really a day-to-day consent flow of, okay, well, we're doing a marketing activity. Let's read in the consent and preferences of our customers to make sure that we're not violating consent. And that would be more of reading it by a status, a consent status with a relevant processing purpose, or something applicable to make sure that those consent and preference signals are being honored. And then there's more of a bulk use case of, like, what has changed in the last 24 hours, 72 hours, 6 hours even, for those customers. And it's a lot of, depending on the setup of a OneTrust customer, it is a lot of handshakes between systems.
Mm-hmm.
Consent by itself is great to have, but is turbocharged when you overlay it with business data.
Mm.
So I can do something in my marketing tool, and I know I can do it because I have the consent layered over it. I can do something in my customer master tool, same reason. So a lot of data is being moved around. And all of these require APIs that are highly performant.
Makes sense. Makes sense. So let's go back just to the first use case real quick. And me being a web developer from a long time ago and having customers back in the day, I would have like a SQL Server database that I would keep track of those customers and I would store their password and things like that. And that still is going on, but our customers are not really storing those preference decisions if they use OneTrust for consent and preferences, because we store that. So the user would then log in to their website using traditional methods, and then that customer would then go out and pull the information from us really quickly, like, okay, what is Roger's preferences that he made last time he was here, and make sure that they honor those and they respect the decisions. Is that kind of how that works? So that transaction has to be, like, instantaneous.
Yes, exactly. So by this point, a customer has already spent a bunch of time with us to make OneTrust a single source of truth. So they want to reach out, get the most updated information about a data subject to, and then pull in the latest information about that person's consent so that they can perform the relevant actions. And what's really cool about the new suite of APIs that we're rolling out is we've partnered with Microsoft on how to get the most out of this new data store technology called Cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
And we're leveraging a feature called Point Read. And you would probably generate more heat on the web server by breathing on it than this request actually takes.
Wow.
to process a point read. So it's very fast. You can make a lot of concurrent requests. It doesn't put charge the system with a lot of load. And
that's really
specifically
cool.
Designed.
So not only are we innovating, but also Microsoft is innovating because we're building on their platform. So it's, that's amazing. So with respect to what we've just released, I know we released the bulk data export and these high performance V4 APIs, version 4 of those APIs. Let's talk about that one first. Like, what kind of calls are there? What is it, reads, writes, you know, those types of things. What are we getting in that high performance set of APIs?
Yes. So we've designed a database can support a common pattern of requests, and that's ultimately what you're indexing on. APIs are easy. I'm using quotes here because I know we're only on audio, but yeah. APIs are easy to build, but how you set up your data will dictate the speed at which an API can extract that data, and especially the volumes we're talking at. So what we've done here is that we've indexed, which is finding the breadcrumb trail between all our different tables, for the most common questions that our customers ask of our APIs today. And often that is the core bread and butter use case, which is find me a data subject or find me a list of data subjects that have this purpose with that status. Mm-hmm. And all of those are variables that, you know, they could put in there. And then also find me data subjects that have been changed in the last 24 hours is another common pattern, because they're trying to capture a delta or something like
right.
that.
Right.
And then, of course, we have use cases around magic links, which are links that can be embedded in an email and that will automatically log in an end customer to their preference center, et cetera. So we support all of that. But these APIs are indexed for those common core use cases that our customers are searching for, so that the database is very, very good at leveling up that information to the API and can do so at great speed and great concurrency.
Yeah. I would think that, you know, just thinking about a system and you think, well, how hard can that be and what can really slow it down? But when you, like you said, if there's hundreds of millions of records in that database and I need to find one, that can take a long time if you don't have it indexed properly. And like you said, Cosmos and Microsoft have made tremendous gains on how fast that can take. So I found the biggest thing at OneTrust is scale. You know,
yes.
On my side, like if I'm dealing with 1,000 records or 100 records, that response is going to come back instantly, no matter how well it's indexed or anything like that. But when you've got hundreds of millions of records, that can, if you don't, the scale is just kind of mind blowing at times, how many records there are.
Yeah. And with SQL, especially, we were running into issues where as a customer's database grew, the same query could take even longer because it's, like you said, it's searching through more of it.
Right.
And then also, if you're pulling a list and not just an individual and you're getting multiple pages, those pages could even take a while. And if you have more pages, let's say you have 1,000 pages, by the time you get to 500, it's actually trying to load pages 0 through 499 into memory.
Oh, wow.
Where Cosmos, that's not the case. It could just pull the exact piece.
Okay.
So it's not diminishing returns.
That's nice. Cool. So these high availability, I guess these are where people are reading, they're writing, they're pulling information, like you said, trends or changes or things like that. And so that whole set of APIs is just around that continuous access and updating, integrating that into customers' workflows, things like that. The other set of APIs is around bulk export, right? So that's where we're going to take a huge amount of records and we're going to export it either to, I would assume maybe not to a file, but I'm going to export it to another system.
Yep. Yeah. So all the uncommon use cases, but still when those questions come up, they're still important to our customers, but they're not they're not doing it at a high frequency, are questions that we still want to support. So ultimately an API, a read API, a get API is going to be a query essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And what the bulk data subject export does is it supports all the use cases around it that aren't, again, nothing that we're seeing in high frequency, but nonetheless still important. So the data subject, like a person, has many attributes,
yeah.
And some of which that we collect are data elements, which customers can configure to their heart's content. It's very customizable, and purposes, statuses, etc. And the bulk export is an asynchronous API. So you make a call to it, you wait for the query to run, and then it processes it back. It supports everything that V4 doesn't, and also supports V4, what V4 does as well.
Okay.
But you can chain together all sorts of different combinations.
What would be like? Would be a good example of what some customers would use this for?
Yeah. So some customers have pretty terse data elements that they're using for internal business logic. So hey, this is coming from this. This input channel that means something to me, like some sort of source on their end. And they can ask it, hey, I want to find all the people, all my customers that have this source with this value. Or I want to find customers that have this purpose with that status and this data element combination. And we went as far as also to support custom preferences filtering, which is a good example of that would be you have at the purpose level, you have do you consent to being emailed? And then a custom preference would be, okay, yes. And then a custom preference would be, yes, on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis.
Got it.
So it would be a preference, built in there. So you can filter off of that as well.
Okay. So I would imagine that maybe a customer has tried some sort of advertising campaign and they may want to see like how many people have responded to that, and they could build a query and they could then say, okay, export this. I don't need it right now. I need it in a day or two. Or how many people have changed since we launched this advertising campaign? Or, you know, like we're coming out with a new car that's blue, and we've asked people in the past, are you interested in blue cars? And they could say, show me all the people that have shown that as a preference or a decision they've made. And then they could then market to those guys. I guess those are all kind of use cases that bulk export would be good for.
Exactly. And you could even use it to for regulatory compliance as well.
Oh, where, great.
Hey, I want to find everyone that's opted out over this particular purpose and build a list off of that.
Mm.
And it'll give it to you in that list format. It supports both CSV and JSON-L export formats, which is a little more friendly when you're trying to integrate with a different
machine. Makes sense. And the way that works is you basically say, give me this information, and then you go on your way and you wait. And depending on how many records you've got and how many records you're getting back, is that could happen in multiple hours, multiple days kind of thing. And then and you just download that file from a different site, and then you can use it to your heart's content. Is that kind of how that works?
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And it was built with the at the volume of hundreds of millions in mind.
Right.
So 10 million is no sweat. The other cool part is that we have an SLA to get all these jobs processed and done within 48 hours. So even for the more complex questions, you're not waiting weeks for it.
It
process it usually within hours. And then at the quickest it'll run is around 10 minutes.
Wow.
It takes about 6 to 7 minutes for something for the nodes on our end to spool up. But yeah, and then you wait for it. So we have a second API that you could actually call and read the status.
Right.
And what I love about this is that it's a step in the direction that we want to go in for OneTrust, which is transparency into the process. I don't want our customers just waiting around. So we actually show you the percentage complete.
Yeah.
Which is a true percentage complete, not just we're going to wait the last 10%. Yeah, for a couple of days or something. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I know that Josue on my team, who's been on the podcast before, he was testing the APIs, and he was calling that get status API every 15 seconds and was talking to the devs. It's like, nothing's changing. And it's like, no, you don't call every 15 seconds. You call every 15 minutes kind of thing. Cause it's not going to change every 15 seconds. So don't do that.
Yeah. It's looking through, especially if you have 100 million or above in there, it's looking through a lot of, a lot of customers.
All right. Final question for you is, and maybe you know this or you don't, I was at one point, I heard the number of like receipts that we receive, transactions we receive on a daily basis. And I heard it was, you know, Twitter type of numbers. Do you have any concept of the number of things, transactions that happen from a preferences every day into our services?
Yeah, I think it's around, for consent in particular, I think we're around 3,000 per hour, but if you layer on cookies, that takes it up to almost 20,000.
Yeah, right.
And that's because that's anonymized traffic.
Right.
So it's really per engagement. But yeah, what a receipt is it's a choice that ultimately an end customer is making to sending some sort of consent signal, do or do not do this with my data. And the data subjects are a little more static because, again, they're ultimately the thing being updated
right.
by the receipt,
right.
where the receipt is, I have clicked this, I have deselected that, and a receipt is a collection of a transactions that have been made in a one go in one submission,
right?
Where the transactions are actually individual
line items. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. I know it's a lot, and that just blows my mind that kind of data is flowing through, and that many people in the world are making that many decisions all the time. So, really cool. Thanks, Anith. Thanks for this, Devin. It's been very helpful. Anything else you'd like to add? Like, how are our testers, our public preview customers that are using it? How are they liking the new stuff?
Yeah, they're loving it. We're loving it as well because it introduces a lot more stability. But our customers are loving it. We already have a couple of live use cases going with bulk data subject export, and we're starting our production migrations for V4. So it's been a long time in the making. We're very excited. The rollout has is relatively seamless, where we've decoupled our ability to do this switch away from customers needing to re-implement.
Mm-hmm.
But once they're ready with the data and we've set them up and done everything that we need to do, we're going to definitely be encouraging customers because it really takes consent to the next chapter of scale and what our customers have been asking for quite a while.
Yep. Sounds great. Well, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Thanks to Devin coming on and giving us that background on the new APIs. If you've got any feedback, questions, or recommendations, please don't hesitate to contact us at podcast.onetrust.com. We'll be back again next week with another episode, so we will look forward to talking to you next week. Thanks for listening.